Welcome to the Bearing Witness Project, hosted by Gabes Torres and Michael Zook.
The Bearing Witness Project exists to equip communities to recognize and understand the harm of religious and spiritual trauma and to take compassionate action to prevent and heal.
On this podcast, we will be telling stories of harm and discussing research that demonstrate the severity of its impact. We are aware that this content may feel painful for some to hear, especially for individuals who have experienced these events firsthand.
If this is true, we highly encourage that you listen to the rest of the episode with a friend or listen to this episode at a later time. That being said, we also attempt to engage with one another and these topics with a sense of hope and warmth.
The views expressed by the hosts and the guests of this podcast are representative of their own personal viewpoints and not of the Bearing Witness Project as a whole and the organizations we are affiliated with.
Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for listening in to the Bearing Witness Project. First things first, I guess we introduce ourselves and what we're doing. So, Gabes, how about you introduce yourself?
Yes.
What's your thing? What's your spiel? And why do you care about this topic of religious and spiritual trauma?
For sure. Well, my name is Gabes Torres, and I consider myself to be a speaker, a theologian, an artist, and the work that I do focuses a lot on racial trauma, on intergenerational trauma, more specifically post-colonialism, and how this affects us today, even though it seems like such a historical event that took place in the past. The most basic concept of the work that I do is that there's nothing post about post-colonialism, and that a lot of the remnants of the events of conquest and of regime continue to manifest in our lives today, and not just in our architecture or in our language or in our education, but also in our psyche and in our relationships. So I'm kind of like, hopefully, like the pioneer, one of the pioneers who would be able to facilitate and the conversation or introduce the conversation around how oppression from centuries ago, this type of oppression from centuries ago continued to emerge in our meaning-making processes and so forth. Right now, I am pursuing a master's in counseling psychology, and I also focus on intersectional feminism and just a lot of attempts to try to incorporate therapeutic interventions within multicultural settings. So that would involve a lot of conversations around racism and race relations and identity formation based on the context that you're coming from, the race in which you identify in, your socioeconomic status, and all these other complexities that are huge components of who you are and who you hope to become. With your question around why is this work important to me, is on an academic or professional level, whenever I talk about post-colonialism and any methods or weapons that which colonizers and oppressors use, one of the main tools that they used is the name of God and scripture and religion, we're going to be talking a lot about this later, about the function or the definition of such terms around religion and spirituality. I think that these themes or these realms really access a really tender and really important part of our hearts. And so to be able to use this as a way to rally up a community or convince a community about a certain way of being and of living in order to find their sense of belonging or a tribe, I think that there's so much power in religion and spirituality. And I've seen how much this power was used against them and was used for some form of advancement for the oppressors or the colonizers at the expense or at the cost of somebody else's freedom. On a personal level, I grew up in a very conservative Catholic/Protestant community in the Philippines. So I was born and raised there. I would consider myself like a third culture kid and a first generation Filipina. So I knew what it's like to be a Christian, but more specifically a Filipino Christian. So that's different when I say Christian in the North American context. It's very different. If I say that I was born and raised a Christian or a Protestant in the Filipino context, there's a lot of fusion that takes place since it is a Roman Catholic country. So in terms of how we understand God, how we understand salvation and obedience and whatnot, I feel like that is very much defined based on my own location, my own community, which is far different from how it is in the West. And I have seen how much religion and spirituality have also been used for a person in power's advantage or a community in power's advantage at the cost of my own freedom and knowing who I am in relation to God in relation to the divine. And I have come to a season in my life where I want to boldly say enough is enough, and I want to start exercising my agency. And I also want to see that happen in many others who are trapped in however way that's going to look like or that does look like in their lives today. So I care about this work because I care about spiritual freedom and belonging that doesn't have to cost somebody anything, but instead free somebody even more, which I think what spirituality is about, freedom and belonging. So that's my little bit of my story.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that.
Thank you. How about you, Michael?
Oh boy. Yeah, so my name is Michael Zook. I am currently a couple weeks away from finishing my master's degree in social work.
Yes.
Which I am so excited about. So the project, this whole project actually came out of a class that I'm taking called Trauma-Informed Practice. Mm-hmm. And we were tasked with studying and looking at a specific population or a specific type of trauma that we wanted to focus on throughout the semester and then do a project on. And so I decided to do religious and spiritual trauma, specifically for sexual and gender minorities. And when I finished the paper, I goofily posted a screenshot on Instagram, just being like, I finished, because I was so excited. And people saw the title page, and I had 10 people reach out to me saying, hey, I want to read this paper. This feels really relevant, or I know someone who this would be relevant for. And I realized all of a sudden that there's this whole community of people who are seeking language and seeking a way to understand their experiences. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of gave me the idea for this. Otherwise, about me personally, I was born and raised in Vienna, Austria. I am a missionary kid. I am, like you, a third culture kid as well. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure we will talk about how our cultural identities intersect with our understanding of faith and the world.
So exciting.
I'm sure about that. But yeah, I still very much identify as both Austrian and American. Focus on the hyphen, Austrian hyphen American. Mm-hmm. And I'm a musician. I'm a researcher. I research the expressive arts and how the arts can impact people who have been impacted by traumatic stress. I also look at how organizations and communities respond to things like structural violence, mm-hmm. Such as our current climate around immigration. And current climate in churches around sexual and gender minorities and how we talk about them. My focus in my degree program has been around providing trauma care to youth and children who have been impacted mm-hmm. by traumatic stress for whatever reason. So that can span from abuse and neglect all the way through to community violence and what I would now consider religious and spiritual trauma as well. And so mm-hmm. a lot of my clinical experience has been around youth and children. And advocating for them too. So I'm both clinically minded, but I'm also very much policy and community organizing oriented. And I really mm-hmm. see the Bearing Witness Project as a form of advocacy as much as just like a fun project we're doing.
Yeah. 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 So that's who we are.
Yeah. So I guess to move onward, mm-hmm. I kind of touched on this already, but the intro to the problem, why is this important? And who are we trying to reach out to? You, our listener, I'm sure you are representing a diverse set of people. But we do have specific people in mind that we're gearing this towards, and I think it's helpful for y'all to know. So who is this project for? First is mental health professionals. So that is really anyone who is professionally working or working in a formal capacity with people who are survivors of trauma. What I've been hearing from people who are survivors of religious and spiritual trauma is that a lot of mental health professionals who aren't part of the faith community, or even those who are but haven't had the same experiences of trauma, just really don't know how to approach this topic. A lot of survivors have been asked questions like, why don't you just leave your faith community? Which just shows this like underlying misunderstanding of the importance of the social part of church and community and communities of faith, and that it's not just religion, but it really is a person, part of a person's identity, as much as anything else is. So there's a lot of work to be done with mental health professionals to really advocate and help them understand, okay, who is this population who have been traumatized and what are the best ways we can serve them?
This project is important for those in faith communities because I believe that every human being wants love and a sense of belonging and a sense of home. And I feel like we're searching that for ourselves and we're trying to create the spaces and the ways in which we find that for others. So we believe that in this project, we're going to offer the space for voices who have been harmed by spiritual and religious trauma, and actually see the reality of the culture and how good intention can actually result in a lot of harmful and violent consequences.
And finally, this project is also for survivors. As people in a project that is geared towards being trauma-informed, what we call trauma-informed, really at the heart of our work is survivor voice. And so that's centering the voices and the experiences of those who have been most impacted by this topic. And so what you'll hear throughout the series will have glimpses of the community of listeners who are sharing us their stories, sharing what their experience was like and what are ways that communities of faith and their larger community mental health professionals can support them and love them and take compassionate action with them. Now, that being said, some of this stuff is really heavy. And at the same time, we want to recognize that religion and spirituality has had so much beauty in it for some people. It does have a purpose, and there is a sense of belonging for people. And so what we're not trying to do, and I'm sure if people knew us personally, they would know this, but since you don't know us personally, most of you, I think it's important to name that we're not just trying to criticize the church. We're not just trying to knock it all down. We're really trying to come alongside of this beautiful idea of the divine loving us and the power that the church can have and working with them to create more compassionate communities.
Right. And I think it's also important to name that we're not coming from a cynical posture, but instead a posture of exploration, of curiosity, and of receptivity, and even of awe for how we're going to be entering into stories where people are boldly, bravely addressing the ways in which they not only have been harmed or violated, but are still searching. They're still searching for a meaning. They're still searching for the divine. And in some cases, they will find that in others or in Mother Earth, which is just as, honestly for me, is just as divine as the concepts of which we construct for this transcendent other. Like what Michael said, we're not hoping to destruct or tear down the traditions that have held community or organizations that have benefited me and that have formed me the way that I am today. Like, I'm really grateful for the ways that a lot of my Bible school professors, a lot of my youth pastors. But I think what's important about prophet work is that a prophet is really honest about, like I said, like the culture and the systems, and that the prophet has an imagination of what faith and community and God actually should look like or ought to look like, or we aspire or hope to be like, and that there's a discrepancy between that and how our culture is today. So we don't have this podcast because we hate a certain thing or purely out of bitterness or anything like that, but it's more because we love the people who are part of these faith communities. And I honestly love a lot of parts of these traditions. And I feel like there's a process of deconstruction that is necessary before we can, I don't want to use the word refine, but season a faith that is not blind, a faith that is nourished, and a hope that is well-informed.
Yeah, absolutely. So quick note about the scope of the work, right? I mentioned earlier that we are an advocacy project. And what I mean by that is that even though we're talking about mental health and we're talking about religious and spiritual trauma and what those impacts are, we're not providing therapeutic services. Now, I personally believe that creating this community and hearing and gaining language about one's experience has therapeutic outcomes, but it's not necessarily therapy. And so both of us, even though both of us are therapists in training, and we both have experience in this, we want to be very clear that we're not providing therapy, nor do we believe that we are providing therapy. On our website, you can see a bunch of resources that we have, including crisis resources if you're in crisis. And then hopefully also we're working on a directory of therapists who specifically engage with this topic of religious and spiritual trauma.
I know that sometimes it feels tempting to reach out to us about your concerns and your stories around spiritual and religious trauma. And I, based on my own work, I can understand that because therapy is expensive. But sometimes it's really hard to find a therapist who does focus specifically on these types of harm. But I think that it would be a great kindness to you to have somebody actually walk with you with your experiences, because Michael and I, as much as we would love to be like a digital presence for you, we want you to be able to have follow-up. We want you to have some consistency and to have somebody within a professional context actually address with a lot of care the things that you're experiencing and the particularities in which you are going through. So out of a kindness to yourself and even to your relationships and your future experiences, I would highly recommend looking into these resources that we'll be listing on our website.
Why don't we talk about spirituality and religion, since obviously these are topics and terms that we'll be using throughout this series and throughout this episode. Gabes, so why don't you introduce us to how we're thinking about these terms, and we can have a conversation about that.
Yeah, totally. So let's start with religion. And from at least my experience of religion, I believe it to be an institutionalized system or a system of beliefs and creeds, and that there's like a formality to it. There's structure and practices and traditions that which are being preserved and that are being done within a certain schedule. Oftentimes when I think about religion, I think about like the specific denomination that which certain organizations and churches are under. So as I said earlier, there's some type of formality and officiality that goes along with it. Whereas spirituality transcends those structures or those boundaries around practices and tradition. And not to necessarily say that spirituality cannot be experienced within a religious activity or a religious community. You can definitely have that. But the spiritual experience does not necessarily have to be influenced, determined, or experienced within an institution or a system of such beliefs and of creeds. I'd like to think that spirituality is something within me and also beyond me that can happen within the religious system and also beyond it. And that there are many different ways in which I personally have experienced spirituality that does not fit in the categories that which religious traditions have said and confessed what it means to have like a divine experience or a supernatural or in my own context, like Christian experience to be. And I think one thing that I'm curious about with this conversation is, I'd like to ask you, Michael, like the question about what you think spirituality is for you. And if you could share with us a spiritual experience that you've had, maybe recently or the most significant one, or something that you just, you know, that you have access to at the top of your head.
Yeah. When I think about spirituality, I think of, like you said, connectedness. I think there is a certain level of connectedness with the divine, but also whatever the divine inhabits. So kind of the blurring of the sacred and secular. I have a friend that kind of this is his his thing, is talking about how we tend to categorize these things into secular and sacred, but in reality, the mundane things in life are just as sacred as the things that we consider such. And another way I think about spirituality is really any type of meaning making that a person makes or does. So I think it's really important that people tap into their quote-unquote spirituality, no matter what their faith is or non-faith is. I think every person in with the definition of meaning-making process is spiritual in that way, because we all, especially with trauma, we all, in the face of suffering, we have to make meaning in some way. Or many of us are compelled to make meaning, maybe is a better way to say that. So a recent example that I can think of is I'm currently back at home, or kind of home, quasi home, in Austria, which is where I grew up for the first time in 3.5 years. And
That is a long time.
Yeah. It's been a while. It's flown by, so it doesn't feel like 3.5 years. But when I really think about all the ways that I've changed and moved, it really has been that long. But yeah, I had this moment. I think it was my second or third day here. I've been here for a little over a week, where I was having a conversation with someone in German, which is one of my, I was bilingual growing up. And I just had this moment where I was transported back into my old childhood self and was really able to connect with myself and this culture and this place and take note and appreciate and honor the part of me that doesn't really get to get activated when I'm just in the States and when I'm just around my American friends. And that's at no fault of their own. That's just the context that it's in. And so for me, that was a really spiritual moment, just to kind of taste the air and smell the air, albeit city air, but it's still familiar air in that way.
And being able to connect with someone on a linguistic level that I haven't really done in a long time.
That's beautiful. Yeah, I was going to say, I'm glad they got to experience that. It's funny because I feel like I can connect with that in some way, because when I was thinking about what the recent or a significant spiritual moment that I've had, it also relates to culture and my own cultural particularity. I would think about the moments whenever I run into a fellow first-generation Filipino.
Yeah.
And then we start talking about which town we're from. It's like as if we've already met in the past yep. and that we're just continuing this conversation where we already know the context of which we're coming from. Mm-hmm. We also start speaking in Tagalog, which is our native tongue. At least like the majority would speak and know Tagalog. And start talking about TV shows and all that. And that there's that sense of connectedness where you don't have to explain yourself that much. And as a minority in the United States, that's something that I have to labor through on a daily basis almost. And even most of the time, like I would have to withdraw myself from explaining and instead like have to adjust to the conversation that's already taking place. And so there's a lot of ease and a lot of remembrance. Like I think you hinted on that there are parts of perhaps your younger self that you finally have access to and that have been activated because of that conversation and because of certain of the language that was being used and maybe the certain landscape that which you're in or familiar smells. Recently I've ran into someone who's Filipina, and we're not really that close, but what's funny is that the friends that who were accompanying me when I ran into her, they were like, "Oh, you must have known each other for a very long time." But we're like, "No, we've only like met once." Yeah. So it's like moments like that where it feels like home. Mm-hmm. In a lot of ways, even though in our particular identities as third culture kids, it's really hard to, it's such a sacred word, the word home.
Yeah, yeah.
Like we don't use that word lightly.
Spirituality truly is us trying to find home, trying to find what home is, whatever that means for that person. Trying to find a place where we belong and where we're fully known and seen and loved for in all of our brokenness and in all of our beauty.
Thank you for listening to the first episode of the Bearing Witness Project. We are grateful that you chose to lean in as we engage with the complex and difficult topic of spiritual and religious trauma. Next week, we will continue to unpack the experience of traumatization from our personal experiences and clinical training.